What's going on, everybody? It's be your boy DJ Anonymous with Sports Biz Music, the podcast, episode 69. And I got a special guest on the show tonight. I got DJ Dramas.
Yep.
I said it right, right?
Dramas, yep, you got it right. So if you mess up, say Dramas, but yeah, Dramas.
Dramas, man. How you doing, man?
I'm straight, man. I'm good. I'm happy on here. I appreciate you having me.
No, I appreciate you, you know, because I know you have a busy, like, you know, week and everything. And
of course.
And, like, I just appreciate you just, you know, having an open block, you know, to come on my show. I really appreciate
that. Of course, man. I got to show love. I appreciate what you're doing.
So, most people may know you from, like, being the guy by DJ Envy, the quiet right. one and stuff like that. But, like, give, like, a little introduction to, like, to the people that may not know you or may know you but don't know what you do besides right. like, producing.
So I'm one of the producers on The Breakfast Club. So that's where you see me sitting next to Envy, you know, all the interviews and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Aside from that, I am a radio personality myself. So I'm on a station here in down Jersey and another one in Connecticut as well on air. I also DJ. I DJ for another radio station here in New York City called Z100. I also DJ for a syndicated radio show that's like, it's 160 stations around North America, something like that. And then I also have a podcast called Beats and Booze where we just do like really laid back kind of green room, you know, conversations with different artists. We've got anybody from like G-Eazy to Diplo on the show. And then also I'm a club DJ and a music producer as well.
That's what's up, man. So, like, before we dig deep into, like, you know, everything that you're doing so far, tell me about, like, you know, tell me and the listeners about your beginnings. Like, what made you want to, you know, get into, like, DJing and, like, producing and get into, like, media as well?
I mean, it started, you know, I always was super into music, you know. Originally, I was playing, I think I originally wanted to be, like, an R&B singer, but I don't have much of a voice. But I was always just dabbling and stuff. Like, it depended on what I was influenced by as a kid. It was definitely, like, the Bad Boy era, you know, music. So I was super into that kind of stuff. And then from there, I kind of started getting into bands. I was playing in bands as well. I played drums in a band. I used to tour and, you know, record and do all kinds of stuff with that. And when that kind of came to an end, you know, I kind of stopped doing music as far as creating, you know. And I just felt like a part of me was missing. So I just kind of was looking for something new. I'd always had an interest in DJing. So, you know, at the time I was working at Guitar Center in New Jersey. And from there, I just kind of started learning about DJing and bought some gear and, you know, kind of slowly worked my way up and then kind of stumbled into the radio from there.
That's what's up. So, like, what was, like your first gig as, like, a DJ?
Like, man, how was that? My first gig. It was actually, so at the time I was still, like, heavily involved with, bands while I was DJing. So I was DJing, but I was also kind of running like a small little record label when I was helping out like smaller bands. And we actually had like a stage at this festival in Illinois. And basically we had like at night this whole block of time that we didn't have any bands booked. So we were just like, all right, we're going to throw like a party, you know, at our stage or whatever. And I had my DJ stuff with me. And that was like the first kind of gig. But after that, it was just like, honestly, private anything I can get, private parties, whatever. I would DJ like the back of a bowling alley. I would go to like Long Island and DJ somebody's like, you know, block party or like their, you know, Sweet 16 or something like that. It was anything I can get my hands on, I would DJ.
That's what's up, man. Because like as a DJ like myself, I already know like the grind and stuff, like carrying your speakers and
yeah.
You know, I may not know about the whole crates because you know. I was kind of like, I was like in between that generation.
When yeah, it's like, before my time too.
Yeah, like, it went. So we, you know, we got that same, like, you know, we in the same, like, same age area. So, like, but we still knew about, like, with the speakers and everything. And you got to have all the equipment, make sure everything was good and things like that.
What, yeah, that was a pain.
Yeah, it was. Like, my back still hurt all the time, man.
Yeah, see, honestly, I used to blow out speakers like crazy, and I used to...
Yeah, that's
since true. I worked at Guitar Center, they would let you, like, take stuff on loan every once in a while.
Yeah.
And that was literally all I was doing for the longest time. Like, eventually I had time to stop and buy my own speakers because I just was taking stuff on loan because I couldn't afford to, at the time, even buy a pair, you know, a set of speakers. I just wanted to get out there and DJ as much as I could.
Right. Was you involved, like, in the whole mixtape era as well?
I wasn't like putting out mixtapes, but I remember like as a kid, you know, in high school and stuff like that, like, I had, you know, I had my plug, who was, like, the dude who had all the mixtapes, you know. For me, I think back then it was, like, I was big on Papoose, you know, kind of his mixtape era and all that kind of stuff. And I remember, you know, at the back of the day, that's how you got music. That was how you got, like, all the hot new records and all that kind of stuff. Like, you did Drama. I remember Clue from when I was really young. I remember Clue and all those kind of dudes, like Funk Flex and those kind of guys as well. That was you know, how you got a lot of those cool records that, you know, Nia Reels had.
Yeah, man, because, like, I tell these kids, like, the younger generation, I'm 27, so I tell, like, 18-year-old, 17-year-old, like, y'all missed, like, an era where, you know, it was so many mixtapes, you know, from all different regions. And, like, for example, like, even Drake, the So Far Gone, like, a lot of these kids don't even know that's a mixtape, you know.
Yep, absolutely.
And, like, you know, you had, like, J. Cole, Friday Night Lights, and you also had Wiz Khalifa, OJ, and Kush and OJ.
Yep.
And, like, that was just that era for mixtapes and stuff like that, you know. So.
It was cool. I honestly missed that, too, because, like, you would have them, like, you know, rapping over beats that weren't theirs, you know, like, people would resample stuff. It was just cool versions of stuff. Obviously, like, the Dapiff era. It was cool, and it was a good way to find new artists I didn't really know about, you know, especially on, like, that Dapiff. I would just kind of see who was trending or whatever it was and then go on there and check out the mixtapes. And, I mean, honestly, as a DJ, I'm a little upset that I missed out on that era, because a lot of dudes made a lot of money off of making mixtapes.
Yeah, they did. They did.
Yeah, so, I mean, I hear stories about, you know, guys like Clue and Envy and even, you know, dudes like Diplo, you know, used to just hustle mixtapes and make a lot of money back then.
Right, right. I have a question.
Sure.
Cause, you know, I spoke to, you know, some artists, you know, on my show, and a lot of them say that the streaming, like streaming now, like the era of streaming, like, it helps them, you know. But I know, as a DJ, do you think it kind of take out the fun of, like, just trying to discover, like, artists, or you think it's still the, like, as far as, like, the SoundCloud artists and stuff like that?
It's weird, man, because, you know, in the club, I think people aren't really looking to hear new music for the most part, you know. So, to a degree, I mean, I'm playing in the club, you know, twice a week, you know, sometimes more. And, yeah, it can get a little boring, you know, where you kind of have to get a routine down, you know, if you don't want to. You know, like, I know this is going to work. I know they're going to want this, blah, blah, blah. And when you try to drop in a new record, you don't really get that reaction, you know. So I think that is probably a byproduct of the streaming era, you know, where people, just the on-demand era, you know what I mean, where people can get what they want on demand, you know. Nobody's, like, sitting there. You don't really have to sit there and, like, when I was a kid, you know, sit there listening to the radio waiting for, like, your favorite song to come on. You have to listen through all of the songs while you're waiting, you know. Now you're just checking everything out on demand as you want it. So I think that streaming stuff definitely has hurt as far as, like, people maybe discovering new stuff. But on the other hand, I think as independent artists, small artists coming up, you know, there are still those niches of kids that, like, want to hear something new, that want to be the dude that discovers something. And that's what, you know, that SoundCloud era has kind of come about, you know, where, you know, there's that, those people who live on those SoundCloud kind of charts and finding new artists and stuff like that. So it still exists, it's just not in the mainstream, I guess. It's kind of hurt the mainstream to a degree.
Yeah, not like I used to. Like, I feel like the SoundCloud artists, you know what they call now, they kind of like the last bit of artists where, you know, it's still fun to, like, discover, like, new artists and stuff. But, like, you have, like, Spotify, iTunes, Tidal, you have all these big name streaming services where they actually, like, get a John Doe from, like, Montana, from his, you know, from his house, and, like, he signed to that service, you know. So it kind of like, as a DJ, kind of like, all right. Even as a fan, it's like, dang, like, I can't really, like, go about, you know, social media and find, like, the next big, you know, potential artist and stuff like that, you know. But
yeah, I mean, it puts the power in the listener's hands, too. They can do the same thing you used to do when it comes to digging and finding new artists. You know, like, you can go check out, I don't know, Spotify's viral charts and see what's popping in, like, Atlanta or something like that, you know, very easily, you know, as a listener. So, yeah, it kind of takes that away from us a little bit. But, you know, as with anything, you kind of just got to keep evolving and roll with it. You're never going to beat technology. Technology is going to win, so you got to kind of just adapt to it.
Yeah, that's true. So what made you, like, get into, like, radio? Like, what was, like, your first opportunity to put, you know, get your foot in the radio industry? in the media?
I always liked radio. I was always a fan of it. Mm-hmm. I grew up, you know, I'm like the era of like, you know, Funk Flex and guys like that, and I used to look up to that. But radio always just seemed crazy to me. Like, it never seemed like it could be something real, so I never really kind of pursued it. Really, how I got into it was just DJing. I was DJing, and not even anywhere good. It just so happened, like, one of the random, like, dive bars that I was, you know, DJing this Thursday night party at, one of the guys who was also a DJ just happened to, like, work at one of the radio stations here in New York called KTU. Mm-hmm. And he would do, like, the overnight shift, which is midnight to 6 a.m., and he would just run the boards, like, he wasn't on air at night. He was just running the boards from midnight to 6 a.m. And through him, I started meeting people who worked up here at the radio station. You know, because we have like four different radio stations on the same floor, not just like, you know, where the breakfast club is, but we have three or four other ones.
Yeah.
So, you know, and guys hang out. So I would just start meeting people, and I would be always constantly going out. If I was invited to go hang out somewhere, I always would say yes. I would always just go out and meet people. And honestly, that went on for like, I don't even know, probably 2 years or so. Mm-hmm. Until eventually, like, somebody was getting fired over here at that same station, KTU. Mm-hmm. And just in conversation, it kind of came up, like, yo, why don't you give, you know, Dramas a shot? And through that, you know, they would sneak me in on, like, Sunday mornings and teach me how to run the board. And, like, the big boss, the program director, had no idea that they were doing that. And I would get up, you know, I would be in the club till whatever time on Saturday and wake up early as hell. On Sunday, drive into the city every single morning. And that was honestly from, like, May until November. I didn't get officially hired until November, and I wasn't getting paid for any of that. So I was literally just driving up here constantly just to keep learning and show that I was, you know, dedicated to what it was. And eventually I got that job and worked from midnight to 6 a.m., you know, four nights a week for, I don't know, probably a year or two before, you know, things kind of started to progress.
So how was that, like, during that time, like, you know, as a, you know, as a, I guess, like, being the radio and stuff like that? Because I remember when DJ Khaled was on the radio down here for, like, 99 Jams, and, like,
yep,
it was, like, every day, 5 o'clock, traffic jam, DJ Khaled and stuff, and, like, people, like, seeing the growth of Khaled, like, I remember when he dropped his first album, like, it was then that he was, like, he elevated, like, he went from being full-time to part-time to, like, you know, he made it, you know. So, like, how was, like, being in the during that time, like, just seeing, like, different artists come in and out and stuff like that?
It was wild, man. It was wild because this is, like, I grew up listening to these radio stations, you know what I mean? So, for me to be in the building, let alone now actually, like, a real employee, it was crazy, and it was cool, you know. I mean, I was still broke. I wasn't making a lot of money. I still had my other hustles and trying to do other things, but to be a part of it was crazy, man. You know, like you said, you know, bumping into artists. To, you know, I remember I would leave here at like, you know, 5:50 a.m. and I, you know, every once in a while I would run into Charlamagne or Envy walking out, and, you know, we didn't really have conversations. We know each other, but just to kind of say, you know, what up, you know, give him a pound or say good morning or whatever. Like, that was always wild to me because, like, I was listening to them, you know, before I worked in radio. So all that kind of stuff was cool, and it was really just sort of eye-opening to how real this actually could be for me, you know what I mean? You know, I was always hustling, I always had a dream, I always felt like, you know, knew that this is what I wanted to do, but now to, like, be here on such a big stage, such a big platform, and to be seeing and interacting on a regular basis with people who are so successful in this field, and then kind of, you know, realizing they're just regular people like myself, you know, it all started feeling very real, and that was what was, you know, kind of the most amazing thing for me, and it just made me step up my hustle even that much more.
Yeah, that's what Samantha was saying earlier, how, like, when she had to understand that when she seen, like, when she realized that these celebrities was once upon a time, like, just like us, just, you know, just regular people going to school, going to work, and just looking at, like, the people that was ahead of them on the TVs and on the radio and stuff like that. And, like, once you meet them, it's like, they, you know, they like us, you know. They do
the
same stuff every day, eat at the same places most likely, and,
right,
you know, so that's what's up. And, like, how was you able to get the gig at the Breakfast Club as a producer?
Man, so that one, I got kind of lucky to a degree. Like, I think a lot of times when when, like, just like that saying, you know, one door closes, another one opens, basically.
Right.
So, when I was working at doing the overnights, I wasn't full time, you know, so I had no health insurance, I had no benefits, nothing like that. It was still a part time gig. So I got the offer kind of last minute to run like a political talk show, which I hated. It was boring as hell, but it was like conservative, so they were like all pro Trump and shit. It was terrible. But the thing was, it was to get myself kind of, you know. Because this is a gigantic company, like iHeart, and it's a gigantic thing. So you can be working here and not know different people on different levels. It's like, that's a lot going on. So I was like, all right, well, this at least get me in front of a lot of different people who run other shows. And it was full time. You know, they basically put together like a thing where I would still do the overnights a couple weeks, a couple days a week, and then I would go do this other show. And they would make me full time, same pay, but at least I was getting health benefits and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing that for almost a year. I was miserable at it, but I kind of always felt like it was going to lead it to something better. And then randomly got let go from that actual job, running the board for that job.
Mm-hmm.
They're like switching locations. I didn't want to leave like the music end over here. And they kind of were trying to keep me out for a little bit. And then basically, out of nowhere, pulled the rug from under me and was like, hey, we don't need you to come in today, kind of thing. And I was like, damn, so what am I do for money now? I just gave up like half my shifts over here at the other radio station.
Yeah.
And, you know, just kind of kept my head up through that. And, you know, but I was never like, you know, never, you know, sent like a nasty email or nothing like that. It was always like, when they said that, I was like, all right, you know, thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate, you know, that anything ever pops up, just let me know. And thankfully I did it that way, because the woman who runs that, it's called Premier Radio Networks, and basically Breakfast Club, we record here in New York, but it's syndicated all around the country.
Right.
So
right.
Premier is the company that's actually responsible for like it getting to Miami or getting to wherever, you know what I mean?
Okay.
They're the ones who send it out to all the other radio stations, other cities. So the woman who runs that is very close with the boss over at Power 105.1, which is the station that the Breakfast was based out of.
Mm-hmm.
So she kind of hit her up like, hey, you know, Thea's name. Thea's looking for somebody who might be, who's, you know, good on the boards that she could trust. Would you be interested in maybe just coming in and meeting her? I did that, met with Thea. And even then, there wasn't like a job. It was just kind of like she was just kind of seeing who was available, who was around.
Mm-hmm.
And I just stayed on it. You know, I would email like, hey, you know, just want to follow up, whatever. I just kept paying attention, and then I was checking like our website, and I saw that a job had gone up for that radio station. As soon as I saw that, I just kept, you know, running in there like, hey, you know, give me a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually they did. When I first started with the Breakfast Club, we have two studios we run the show out of. One that's like, you know, the side that gets thrown out to just New York, and one that's the national side, which is where, you know, MB and all them sit, where I am now. So they originally just put me in there, into that other studio, and I was just kind of running the local New York side, and then eventually, you know, made my way up to being one of the producers over there that's actually, you know, in the room with them. But it was a process, man. Even when I was in the room with Envy, that was around this time last year, and when they brought me into the room for the first time, and I was running their board for them, it still wasn't my job. Like, I was doing that from March until August before that became my actual job, and I got a contract and like a raise and all that kind of stuff. So it was still a grind. It was still like waking up every day like, damn, this could end tomorrow, you know what I mean? Like, if I mess up, you know, then they could ask you just not to come back, you know?
Yeah, because I remember it was another dude before you that was...
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, and I was like, because I always wondered, like, what was y'all doing, like...
Yeah.
Like, you know, by Envy and Nine makes sense. Like, I was pretty much in charge of everything with the sound and everything.
Yeah, yeah, running any, like, all, you know, whenever you drop one of Boo's bombs, any sound effects, stuff like that. controlling their mics, but also we're handling basically every radio station around the country. So Breakfast Club is 80 markets. Mm-hmm. So if I mess up on the board, it messes up all 80 markets. So I'm running the board basically for all 80 markets for the show.
So that's
what you're doing in that room with them.
So that's that pressure. Like, you in 80 major markets. Like.
Yeah, it was wild, honestly. That I, like, when I first got in there, bro, I'm not even going to try to act like, you know, tough. You're telling me, you just put me in a room with three people that I had been listening to before I even got into radio that I, like, never thought I'd be in a room with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Three of the most successful people, not only in our company, but in all of radio.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I'm sitting across from people like Kevin Hart, and I'm trying to, like, not supposed to keep it together, you know what I'm saying? And it was, it's just not an easy job, a lot of pressure. So yeah, I had the worst like anxiety and just like, you know, had, you know, just really coming to work. There's a, like a point where probably first month or so where I was like, yo, I don't even know if I want to do this because it's just like, I feel uncomfortable. You know what I mean? I'm going in there and it's making me nervous. Like it's making me just, I'm getting up dreading going to work because I don't like, I don't want to mess up. You know what I mean? And there's a lot of times I messed up at the beginning stages. But you know, you persevere, you push through, and then eventually, you know, the your brain, everything else starts catching up to the job, and you're able to kind of, you know, where you can make it through.
Right, right. And I was talking to Samantha too about like how it's like a family atmosphere, you know, in the workplace, and like I want to know from your perspective, it's like, how is it like working with Envy and Angela Lee and Charlamagne and everybody else, you know, that's part of the morning show.
I mean, I love it, man. It was definitely at the beginning, you had to kind of win them over. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You got to think, these are people that have been doing this show for 8 years. Here I am, a new guy that wasn't like their hire. Their hire, you know what I mean? They were like, yo, we got to let Dramos have this job. You know what I mean? It was, you know, the boss came in, was like, all right, we're going to have Dramos try out for the job.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't know me like that. I hadn't worked in the other room, but we never, like, you know, we're in a separate room. We're never sitting down and having conversations like that. So, you know, you're kind of going in there, you're feeling out the room. You know, you don't want to step on anybody's toes. You want to make sure that, you know, the way that they do things, you're respectful of that. And you're not, you know, doing anything to make them uncomfortable in their job. Right. But now, you know, it's awesome. It's crazy to be a part of it, to have conversations with them, to get their opinion on things, you know, especially a guy like Envy, you know, who I look up to as a DJ, just what he's done with his career.
Right.
And, you know, him investing in different things and how he is with his family and all these different things, man. It's wild to have somebody like that I can hit up and be like, you know, hey, what do you think about this? Or can I get you, you know, can I pick your brain on this?
Mm-hmm.
And he's helped me out with stuff, you know, even outside of the station. I can, you know, if I asked him for a favor, I was interested in like real estate stuff, and mm-hmm. my credit was terrible, man.
Yeah.
And he hooked me up with like somebody who has just totally fixed my credit, like all like little stuff like that. It's like, wow, you know, like I appreciate stuff like that, you know. Mm-hmm. Like he doesn't have to do that. He doesn't have to take the time to do that. But he does, you know. And that's what's cool to me, to get to sit in the room with them and just kind of see what people who are at that level, how they you know, do their stuff every day. It's crazy, man. It's great to be a part of it, honestly.
That's what's up, man. You know, you semi famous. Well, I ain't gonna say semi. You famous.
Not about that, but I appreciate it.
You know, like, cause seriously though, cause like, you know, I always tell like my guests on the show is that, you know, everything happens for a reason.
Absolutely.
And like, you know, everyone has their season and time, and like when it happens, you just gotta take advantage of it and just, you know, continue to be consistent. And like, you know, truth be told, people like myself and like I know people that watch the show, they actually pay attention to you and everybody else that's around it, because they like, I wanna maybe not wanna be in that exact position,
right?
Like other like positions, like it kind of motivates them to, you know, to do better in any career they want to get in, because they like, I want to be a lawyer, I want to be a doctor, I want to be in radio personality, I want to be a DJ, you know, I want to be A&R for a big major label.
Yeah,
like, everyone wants to. Everyone need that motivation. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like, you know, with the show especially, like, y'all give us that motivation, you know, and it's just dope.
Absolutely.
It's dope.
No, I mean, yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, I always say, man, I'm not different than anybody else. I just showed up, you know. I showed up and kept showing up. And that's really what it comes down to. And that, like, so if you said, that has nothing to do with if not just radio, that thing is just life. If you show up consistently, show up ready to work, you know, and show up humble, ready to learn, ready to work, you're going to win at some point. You know what I'm saying? Like, somebody's going to bound to be like, all right, let me give this kid an opportunity, you know, or ask you for your opinion. You know, and when you get called upon, just be ready, you know. Mm-hmm. But I really am a firm believer, if you keep showing up, there's no way in hell that you're not going to find success in some way or fashion, you know.
Right. Anything is possible in this world. That's how I always tell myself that.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. Absolutely.
So let's talk about your podcast, Beats and Booze. How that came about?
Yep. That came about, some of the radio crew that I'm friends with over here,
mm-hmm.
we do a trip to Miami every year in March. Basically, they do Miami Music Week over there as like a big networking thing. So basically, back then we used to squeeze like 20 of us in a hotel room. And, you know, you got no choice but to get close with people at that point, you know, so we all become friends. And a couple of the dudes that I stayed down there with, you know, One of them worked here at the radio station. He was a producer. Another one of the dudes was A&R, a record label. And the boy Flips, who's a producer, he's always had this idea for doing a podcast, and he kind of just thought, you know, me and our other dudes, Spirit, would be a good fit for it. So we kind of gave it a shot, and yeah, a couple years later, it kind of just kept rolling. It's kind of wild.
Yeah, that's what's up. Cause I never really got the chance to like listen to it, but I seen like the visuals and stuff, and I feel like I seen it like, yeah, that shit funny, like the way that y'all, you know, communicate with the artists and stuff, and you know, it's just not like a regular, like everyone want to be different, but I feel like everyone don't understand, like trying to be different, you can't just say it, you have to like do it, you know.
And, right.
And like, I mean, when I started when I started my podcast, I want to be different, you know. So
I mean, that's how you can be, you know. Everybody has a podcast these days. Everybody is a you know, shit, a rapper, a DJ, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to figure out what is your lane that makes you different, you know. For us, we're the kind of dudes that, you know, we would always be hanging out, so you're basically seeing a couple friends hanging out, but we're the kind of dudes that, like, nothing was off limits. Like, we would sit there and, you know, and roast each other, you know, on a regular day. So yeah, we do it on the podcast, you know, we do it in front of celebrities, you know. And that's just our thing. And that is what kind of started getting us our name and in the industry, people being like, all right, well, you know, we're happy to come on, you know, Beats and Booze. This is, like, the fun show. You guys are gonna enjoy doing it. And that's, like, been, like, the main pitch, you know. And a lot of the artists, they love it because it's like talking to your friends, and that was in the atmosphere. You know, we want it to be like, you know, you're kicking it, you know, with your friends, and these are the types of dumb conversations that you would have, you know. That's really the whole premise of the show and why we never do what we do.
When was that moment when y'all, like, I guess, I don't want to say clout, but, like, what was that moment when y'all realized that y'all show was going to another level where you were starting to have, like, you know, bigger names come on the show or wanting to come on the show?
I mean, it was when people started hitting us up, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because at first, we basically would just look who's playing in New York City on, you know, Friday or Saturday nights. Cool, we're going to hit up their people. Then it started just getting to a point where we would just be getting offers left and right for people coming in. Like, yo, I got so-and-so coming into New York. You guys want to do an interview? You know? And then when the major labels started coming through with, like, a lot of their bigger artists, we were getting these interviews. That's when it was just like, damn, like, okay. Mm-hmm. Like, people kind of pay attention to what we're doing, you know, and people are messing with it.
Was it, like, nerve-wracking at first?
Yeah, I mean, because what you don't see in, like, those videos is, like, especially if it's a bigger artist, like a major label artist, they have a whole team, like, behind you, you know what I'm saying? So we're doing an interview, but there's a whole team of people watching what you're doing, you know? And, you know, you're basically trying to, you know, block out the fact that you got all these people, and they're trying to look for a reason to, like, stop the interview. They were trying to make sure you don't say anything dumb, like, make their artist look a little weird, whatever it is. Mm. They're very protective, so you got to kind of just block them out, you know? And block out what's going on around you and try to focus on getting a good interview. And then, yeah, obviously it's nerve-wracking at first, you know, kind of gotten used to it now, but when you've got an artist that you're actually, like, a fan of, you know, that you sit there watching YouTube videos of, and now it's in front of you and you're supposed to sit there and have an interview with them, yeah, it's a little nerve-wracking at first for sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I always get nervous, you know, like, I tell people all the time, like, it could be a local artist, local businessman, to, like, someone that's, like, in the industry. Mm-hmm. Like, I get nervous, but, like, I told Samantha earlier, I was like, my coach always telling me, like, if you ain't nervous, you don't care, you know, so.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not doing something that makes you a little nervous, you're probably not, you know, pushing yourself hard enough, to be honest.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, because it's, like, you want to build something, you know, and you want to continue to do it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You want it to be good, you know, you don't want to come across as, like, an amateur. You don't want somebody sitting there like, damn, why am I doing this? You know what I mean? So that's, like, the biggest thing too, is, like, I don't want so-and-so artist to come in there and be like, yo, like, why would my team still be able to do this? This is whack. You know what I mean? Like, what? This is, you know, unprofessional, whatever it is. So you always want to try to, you know, give off a just a good vibe and try and, you know, not come across as, you know, like you don't know what the fuck you're doing, you know?
Yeah, that's true. So you originally from Jersey City, New Jersey?
I live in Jersey City now. I was born in the Bronx. I went to, like, elementary school in the Bronx, and then did, like, high school and all that in South Playfield, New Jersey, which is, like, it's a smaller town kind of by like New Brunswick, New Jersey, Rutgers University area. And then when I started working here in the city, I moved up to Jersey City to be close to the city.
Oh, so you from the Bronx, so you're a Yankees fan?
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure, for sure.
Y'all really stole my boy Staten, but it was time for him to go. Honestly, I was just talking to an artist. Her name is Olivia King. Her brother actually played for the Yankees. She in the minor leagues.
Oh, nice.
But I was telling her, like, you know, it was time like Derek Jeter came and he started seeing what was the problem with the Marlins.
Yeah.
And like our farm system was it sucked, you know, like compared like the other years. And you know, the stupid owner before, like, he offered Stan earned that money, but it was just like, come on, we need pitching, you know. So I felt like it was time for Stan to, you know, go somewhere, you know, to a winning, you know, franchise and just, you know, start over. But yeah, that's what's up. I ain't no Yankees fan.
Yeah, I mean,
fan,
you can't. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a team sport. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's you can't have just one star player and the rest of your team is trash. Sometimes you got to give them up to get better. You know, that's like, that's in life in general. You got to sometimes take a step back to, you know, take a few steps forward.
Yeah, because, you know, my wife, she's a Yankees fan. She's from Manhattan.
Okay. Oh, nice. Okay.
I don't like the Yankees. I don't like the only New York team I really like for real is the Giants, because they beat the Patriots twice. You know, I'm a Dolphin fan.
Which team?
The Giants, because they beat the Patriots twice.
Giants, okay.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm a Dolphin fan, so we kind of got to, like, you know, adopt them as one of our teams, you know, but.
But it's funny, I'm actually a Tampa Bay Bucks fan in football.
Oh, really? For real?
Yeah.
Wow. That's what's up.
Yeah. Why random,
Why not, like, a Jets or a Giants fan?
I don't know. I didn't grow up, like, my dad wasn't super into football, so I didn't have, like, any loyalty with growing up, really. Mm-hmm. I think I was a Cowboys fan for a little bit just because, like, one of my dudes was a big Cowboys fan. But when I started getting into it when I was a little bit younger, like, red was, like, my favorite color. And I remember this was, like, when the Bucks changed their jerseys to red. And that was, like, what got me, you know, to be a Bucks fan. That was, like, the age where I was like, all right, I got to pick a team kind of because everybody else likes football. And probably, like, the Madden era as well. Yeah. So then I was like, all right, well, I like red. I was super young and then kind of stuck with it. And I became a big fan of it.
Yeah, and that 2002 team was crazy. That
That was when they won the Super Bowl. That was that defense is legendary, man. Yeah. They actually won the Super Bowl on my birthday. I remember. It was amazing.
So what's you Aquarius?
Yep.
That's what's up, man. Because a lot of people don't know. Back in them days, the Super Bowl was actually played, I think, in late January, early February.
Yeah, my birthday's January 25th. Yes, they used to play in late January.
Yeah, man, that was a good old days, man.
Yeah.
Good old times, man. But
yeah, man.
The reason why I asked about jerseys, because I had a few artists from Jersey, and, like, you know, being so close to New York and like being outshadowed, you know, from NY, and like, you know, I just like to ask, like, the artists, like, how is it in Jersey? And they was, like, basically telling me, you know, it's not really what people think it is. Like, you know, once someone blow up, you know, they kind of, like, either hate or try to bring that person back in that group of people that's, like, I guess, quote-unquote, miserable, you know. And but I remember, like, when Jersey had, like, Redman and Queen Latifah and all of them, and they was all unified. So I don't know if it's a generational thing or is it, like, in certain parts of Jersey? Like, that's what I want to know, like, from your perspective.
It's tough, man. I don't feel like we have, like, a scene. It's weird. Jersey's very separated for as small of a state as it is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So where I'm at in Jersey City, we got, like, a really cool kind of art scene happening, you know, that it's a lot of artists out here of all kinds, you know, from, like, graffiti artists to painters to rappers to DJs to whatever. And there's definitely, like, a cool kind of scene, you know. I know a lot of the DJs are really close, and I have my crew, you know, that I'm really close with as far as local DJs and that kind of stuff. But I think it also is probably highly competitive might be why you don't see a lot of unity, because there are very few clubs like that, like real clubs, you know, to play and that kind of thing. So I think a lot of people always felt like they kind of had to push other people down in order to keep themselves up, you know what I mean? That's never really been my mentality, but I've definitely seen it around, you know? And you know, you kind of just got to make do with it. We don't really have, I wouldn't say we have like a crazy unified scene, but I mean, you got people that message, like, you just have kind of like, I think, different pockets, different groups, you know. And outside of that, it's not like a huge, you know, melting thing, but like, it's not like in, I don't know, in Atlanta kind of thing where you have like a whole scene of people who kind of know each other and that kind of thing. It's definitely like pockets of that kind of stuff, you know. It's all kind of broken off a lot smaller, I think.
Right, because the reason, like, I'm gonna break it down to you, because Miami's kind of like that way, and it's kind of like that in that way, but people somehow, it's like, just like you said, it's more like you got to be in the crew, you know what I'm saying? Like, if I was to blow up tomorrow, you know, I would try to bring up everybody, but then I honestly would bring up the people that was close to me first, you know what I'm saying? And I think that's like a mentality where, like, versus like Atlanta, Atlanta is like, you can have beef with somebody, but it's like, at the end of the day, we all going to that, they all going for that same goal, and that's, and that's try to be successful and stuff like that, you know. And I remember back in the days, like, I know New York got it now, but I remember when I was younger, New York had like a lot of like, it was unity, like, with the DMXs and the Busta Rhymes and everybody. Some people say 50 Cent ruined it. I feel like it was because of the South was kind of like coming up in that time, and stuff like that. But I mean, you know, it is what it is, though. You know, but
New York, I think back then had more of like, I mean, this is before my time, but from what I can gather, you had certain nights that were like everybody would come out, and I want to say it was something like Sunday nights. You would have the tunnel, like Flex with DJ, and everybody who was like a part of that scene would be out there. You know what I mean? Like, and there was like a place to be. Atlanta probably, I feel like, does have something like that. You know, I'm not tied into it like that, but I mean, from what I hear about how a lot of records are broken in the strip club and stuff like that, it's like, there's like that meeting place, you know what I'm saying, where everybody goes to on a certain night, and that's where you go. Jersey doesn't really have that kind of thing, you know. Yeah, you have like little parties here and there, but it's not unified kind of like that, you know. And I think it's probably not like that in a lot of places where you have one scene like that.
Yeah, because like I'm like you, like, you know, you being from New York and me from being Miami, like Miami had that back in the day. Like, they had a spot where you know, like Uncle Luke and everybody had like jams and stuff, and you know, that's when it was unified. But now, like, you know, we kind of like the same way. We don't really have that spot where artists and DJs and creatives can just come together and just, like, just create, like, stuff. And, like, for me, I'm low-key trying to do that, you know, for mine. Because, you know, it's sad to say, but I feel like we don't have no direction for Miami since the Leak and Trick Daddy days. Like, now it's like, we either try to sound like Atlanta, we either try to sound like the West Coast, New York, Houston. Like, I'm like, we need to have our own sound, you know. But that goes back to like being unified, you know. So
yeah, I mean, it's tough, man. I think the internet kind of, it hurts that a little bit, you know, because people kind of go off and do their own thing, you know. But yeah, I mean, it takes somebody building it as well. I don't think it can't be done, you know. It just takes somebody really being like, all right, this is what we're doing now, kind of thing, you know.
Right. And I see that you also have a single coming out in a couple of days called Get It.
Yeah. That comes out on March 1st, so Friday, March 1st. That comes out. Yeah, that's with, it's a collab I did with TT the Artist. She's an MC from Baltimore. She's known as like the Baltimore Club Queen. So that's tight. I'm really excited about that one. Her, I was actually a fan of her years before I really started producing. She attracts like Diplo and people like that. So I was always a fan, and yeah, I hit her up, sent her an email with like an instrumental, and she really liked it, and she sent back some vocals. And now, man, we have a track coming out. You know, we're self releasing on Friday.
So this is like your first like single, like, so you plan on working on the album as well, or EP?
I'm working on an EP right now. Actually, I kind of just started, like, I had been making a couple tracks. I'm like, you know, I would like this to be like an actual EP, you know, kind of project, have a theme behind it. But yeah, my goal this year is to really be putting out a release every single month. So whether it's just a single, whether it's me doing like a remix, or whether it's an EP, you know, I want to be putting out something consistently and just kind of feeding, you know, the world every single month. You know, because I had been dabbling in producing for a couple of years now, but I never really like sat down what I would consider to take it seriously. You know, I never had the confidence in my production And I feel like I never really found the sound that like lent itself to my talents, you know, until recently. So now that I feel like I'm there, you know, if I don't put stuff out, I only have myself to blame at this point. So I just kind of really taking it seriously this year.
That's what's up, man. I'm looking forward to the single and like all the projects that you got going on.
Appreciate it, man.
Whenever you got something to promote, like just send it my way and I'll promote it. You know, it's all love, man.
I appreciate that for real, man. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
And I got two more questions for you before I let you go. As a DJ.
Yep.
I know you before, we had so many DJs before our time and like,
yep.
You know, while we was growing up and stuff, like in middle school and high school, we talked about like Envy. I talked about like Khaled and Drama and like Clue and everything. And one of my favorite questions of my show is like the top five. It could be anything, you know, and like for you being a DJ, I want to know who's like your top five DJs of all time.
Man, that's tough. I don't know, it's tough. On that. I'm gonna give you a top five that's influenced me. I'll give you that.
Okay, that's
fine. I feel comfortable in that. So probably first DJ I ever saw was like Jazzy Jeff, you know, as a kid, you know. And you don't realize till you get older until you actually start DJing how great Jazzy Jeff actually is as a DJ, how nice he is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, definitely probably with the person that started to open my eyes like to what DJing was him. I have to say Clue. For sure, like guys like Clue, Flex, I saw what they were able to do building a brand and not just DJing, but you know, having actual records in stores, you know, and Clue with Rough Riders and Flex had his own stuff in stores, and Flex had like back in the day the stuff with Lugs, the Boots, and Dubs Magazine, all this different stuff, right, that he was involved in, and radio. So definitely those two sets, three. I would say. Just as far as like, man, I'm probably gonna give you six. I would say DJ AM for sure would have to be there because the dude just got busy. I mean, you talking about somebody who could DJ any genre of music and walk into a room, you know?
Yeah, then he passed away, right? Like,
unfortunately, he passed away. But I mean, I was listening to some of his old mixes like over the weekend on a drive, and I was like, damn, like he did everything. Every kind of genre of music you think of, the dude was mixing it seamlessly, and he didn't care, you know.
Yeah.
So he was, I like AM a lot. I'd say Diplo, not necessarily like that he's like, you know, gonna sit there and put on a turntablism show, but his ability to rock a party and any kind of party is something that I can appreciate for sure. And I'm gonna give myself a six just because I would say today, like right now where I stand, like Envy is a huge influence for me just because being around him, seeing his work ethic and all those different kinds of things, like it really just shows me what I should be striving to do and you know, and where I want to kind of get myself to. So I'm going to give you those six that influence me personally.
That's what's up, man. That's a tough top six because if you look at it, all them DJs, you know, they pretty much gave us a blueprint of like, you don't have to just be a DJ forever. You could just break out and get into media, you know, create a business.
I mean, that's what it is, man. It's diversifying. It's like rich people do the same thing with their money. You know what I mean? They don't just invest in one thing and that's it.
Right.
Rich people diversify the portfolio, whatever the hell it is.
Exactly.
You know, you invest in a bunch of different things, and it should be the same way. You can't just get bogged down in one thing because you could be hot right now as a DJ, but when the next dude comes around, you're not getting as many bookings, not getting paid as much. Like you banked all your, you know, money and your plans and your future on that one thing. You know.
Yeah.
So it's all about, you know, diversifying and figuring out a way to kind of do it. You know, it's great. It's the platform that being a DJ gives you and doing different things and building off of that and just creating other opportunities for yourself.
Exactly. And the one last question that I wanted to ask, I asked everybody else, is where do you see yourself 5 to 10 years from now?
Man, 5 to 10 years. 5 to 10 years. Wow. I would say in 5 years, man, I want to be just, you know, traveling around, DJing around the world, you know, and definitely, like, you know, have my hands in multiple businesses and real estate and things like that. You know, my goal for the end of this year is to buy my first, like, house, my first investment property and house. So I want to be able to do a bunch of different things like that. And in 5 years, hopefully, just be putting out music, working with different people, and flying out DJing, and radio definitely still being a huge part of my life. You know, I would love to kind of, you know, sort of have radio during the week as like my day job, and then be flying out, you know, to DJ a couple gigs on the weekends or whatever it is. If I can achieve that, I'd be super happy. Man, in 10 years, I don't know. I hope to be doing similar stuff to that, but also just passing it along. You know, I hope in 10 years I can look back and look back on like my career, my life, and know that I also helped other people who I saw had a similar hustle and drive that I did, you know.
Right.
So I would hope that in 10 years I can look back and just kind of see like a sea of people that I've touched, you know, out there doing their thing, and then passing it on and learning from, you know, my sort of view that we can all win together, you know, and then passing that same kind of mindset onto other people. And I hope, you know, 10 years my successes and I've been able to put other people on with that as well.
Right. Well, don't forget about me. I tell everybody all the time, don't forget about
me. I got you. I appreciate you.
You know what I'm saying? When you about to win a Grammy and stuff like that, like, hey, hit me up and I'll, like, you know what I'm saying, give you your interview, you know what I'm saying?
I got you.
You know, but that's what's up, man.
I got you. Nah, man, it's all love, man. Anytime you got something that, you know, you're trying to get out there, you always definitely let me know. Or you got, you know, any question, anything, you could always feel free to hit me up and pick my brain. I'm always around.
Of course, man. So, any shout-outs before we officially close off the podcast?
Man, I mean, follow me on social media at DJ Dramos, DRAMOS. Mostly on IG. I'm very active on there. Like we said, I got a record coming out on Friday. That'll be out on all streaming platforms. It's called Get It with TT the Artist. And I got my podcast Beats and Booze, which is on every podcast platform you can think of. And yeah, man, I don't know anybody that's, you know, hey, thank you for the support. And thanks to anybody that goes and checks me out after this. I always appreciate the support, and I'm always like I said, open to anybody. So you got music, whatever, just hit me up. Come correct, you know what I'm saying? You know, give me a little intro, say what's up, but always anybody can feel free to send me stuff or ask me questions. I'm always open to helping people out.
Right, just like I did. Like,
absolutely.
Make sure, like, anyone who I hit up, especially, like, that's, like, even above me, way above me, like, I have to make sure that everything is correct so, like, we could, like, build that relationship, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah, don't be just sending links and no context whatsoever. And like, I'm not going to check it out. You didn't take the time to, you know, to actually talk to me like a person. I'm not going to take the time to check out what you're doing. So, you know, always come correct, and I think people will always mess with you. I know I will, at least.
Yeah, for sure, man. But, man, I appreciate you coming on the show, man.
And, absolutely.
This has been DJ Anonymous for Sports Biz Music, the podcast, episode 69 with DJ Dramos, and we out.
Peace.